Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presents its fifth annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan. Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest. Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander. San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry. Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are with Rick Sharga. Rick is an executive vice president at Carrington Mortgage Holdings, LLC. Rick is one of the most often quoted experts. He's been on every TV show about mortgage and real estate records, and he's been seen on NBC Nightly News, CNN, CBS, NBC. There's probably no place you haven't been seen. And really is a trusted voice in what's going on in the real estate world. Rick, we really welcome you back to our show.
Oh, always nice to talk to you, Bruce.
I guess we ought to figure out what Carrington does, and maybe it's almost easier to ask you what it doesn't do. It's really got quite a platform in the real estate business at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah, our CEO likes to joke that about the only thing we don't do in single-family residential real estate is cut down the trees.
Okay.
The company started as an investment firm back in 2003, investing in mortgages, and got into the servicing business in 2007, buying the servicing platform of New Century out of its bankruptcy proceedings, largely to protect the investment in the loans that it had made, and New Century was servicing the majority of those loans when it went bankrupt, and has gradually built on ancillary services to augment the servicing business, to manage the assets themselves, to do rental management of our properties, property preservation, and even a real estate brokerage, Atlantic and Pacific Real Estate. So it really touches just about every aspect of single-family residential businesses.
And including making new loans, doing loan mods, all of the above.
That's correct. We do have a mortgage lending division that has both a retail presence with its own branches and a wholesale operation through mortgage brokers across the country.
And we really look forward to you being on the panel this year because of Carrington's position in the marketplace as a big buyer, and you've got other companies that are doing similar things, and it's definitely been a change in the marketplace. It's almost like residential real estate has a market maker, if not individually, collectively, and that's a first.
I hadn't looked at it that way, but I think your insight is spot on. The fact of the matter is, there's an awful lot of money on the sidelines. There aren't a lot of terribly attractive investment opportunities for that money to go chase. A lot of investors would like to participate in residential real estate, and there just really aren't a lot of financial products that let them do that. So we are seeing a lot of interest in this category. In fact, the interest probably exceeds the available inventory, which is a bit of a conundrum.
Well, what's interesting is that, your company, and last week we got phone calls from two new groups that are interested, and our name comes up, the Norris Group name comes up almost invariably, so we get that conversation or that meeting, and it is interesting. I kind of think that you've gone through some of the learning curve as far as how easy it is to buy 1,000 properties. And I think they're about to start the journey, but their assumption is it's a lot easier than it's going to be, isn't it?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, if you don't care what you spend, you can actually get a lot of properties quickly. We've just decided that our approach is that we don't plan to overspend on properties. You can do that to get to critical mass more quickly, and perhaps you can bank on rental yields kind of papering over some of that, or maybe coming up with some sort of security product that'll reduce your capital costs. But we're opting right now to pay what properties are really worth, and that'll slow it down for us a little bit, but we think it's a better long-term strategy.
It's interesting that you said there's some companies that seem like they want to reach critical mass, kind of an odd way to ask the question. Why is that critical for them?
There are companies that have already announced plans to create REITs or other types of securities, and in order to do that, you really need to get to critical mass pretty quickly, a certain number of properties producing a certain amount of cash flow. And what appears to be happening is that some people might be willing to overpay for certain assets in order to get to that critical mass more quickly.
Well, what's interesting is that the volume of demand is outstripping supply by a considerable amount, to where what you bought yesterday for what seems to be an unreasonable price is, in fact, tomorrow's price, and very quickly.
Well, you know, I've heard this song before, and it didn't end really well.
No.
So we'd like to hope that history won't repeat itself and we don't have another artificial boom followed by an explosive bust. But you and I both also know that as prices stabilize and start to go up, you'll probably get some of those people off the sidelines who are waiting for the absolute market bottom before they came back to buy.
Sure.
And so we have normal trends of people looking to buy properties. We have investor interest. There's certainly still individual investor interest. And frankly, you have limited availability of assets for three reasons. The new home building basically has screeched to a halt for all intents and purposes over the last few years. The banks are not processing the foreclosures as quickly as we anticipated because of regulatory and legislative issues. And then the third component of that is, until home prices go up a little bit more, you have a lot of current owners who are unwilling to sell because they're either upside down and can't sell, or they like to hold off and make a little bit more money on the disposition of their own property. So you have three things holding back supply. At the same time, you have, you know, more active interest in the demand side. And it really has created kind of an unusual imbalance.
One thing that's unusual, and I don't know if we mentioned this last time we talked, I had just looked at the statistics, and I had never really thought about how many people we foreclosed on in 2008 and 2009 being significant as they are now buyers in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But you add up 2008 and 2009 in, say, an area in San Bernardino County, it's 200% of a year's worth of volume.
And you're right, and these are folks that are now trying to re-enter the buying market. What will be a little bit of a gating factor there is that, I don't know if you saw this, but the report came out today that indicated the average FICO score on a successful mortgage application today is 740.
Yeah, that's I really have looked at the reports from Fannie and FHA. FHA, I mean, this is a pretty significant change in attitude about who you're loaning to. In 2007, 47% of FHA's borrowers had a 619 FICO score or less. In 2011, 3%.
Right. So even those people that are theoretically able to come back into the market at this point after being foreclosed on a few years ago probably aren't going to have FICO scores that will make it easier for them to get a loan.
What's interesting about that is one of the gentlemen that we interviewed recently is a guy named Philip Tyrone, who owns a credit improvement company, because those have a bad rap. He understands the credit system, and he tells people, okay, if you do these things, mm-hmm. you'll have a road back to a good FICO score. And he told me that he doesn't know what's changed in the system, but it used to take 2 years of solid effort to get you from wherever you were to 720. Now it's happening in 9 months. So maybe people want, you know, whoever's in charge of making the decisions apparently wants people to have a better FICO score so they can buy stuff. That's my only, I don't understand what the difference would be.
No, it is hard to figure that out. There's been a lot of speculation that it would be easier this time around for people to either correct their FICO scores or get loans with lower FICO scores, ultimately simply because so many people have had their credit damaged by this unprecedented wave of foreclosure activity and the subsequent economic meltdown. You know, there are also companies like ours that are looking at creating new loan products for people exactly like that, people who have had damaged credit for, you know, a variety of good reasons, of you know, not something they did to themselves, but can make a down payment, have a good track record of work history, and can provide full documentation. So that's a hugely underserved market right now, and somebody's going to come in and serve it before too long.
Yeah, the subprime number two, but that's. It could be.
I think we can officially say no one will ever market something called a subprime.
You're right about that. No, that wouldn't fly too well. But the concept about there's definitely creditworthy people that are getting told no in this marketplace. And one of the things that's interesting, California Association of Realtors, you know, do lots of presentations. And one of the charts they had basically showed that if you buy in San Bernardino, you save $500 a month over if you're renting. In the median price home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'd be the driver. I mean, if for no other reason, you might have a bad taste in your mouth about owning, but if it saves you $6,000 a year, you're probably going to try and get one.
If you have the down payment that you need to buy the house in the first place.
And if you can find something to buy.
So, you know, it's interesting. The mortgage rates being what they are, home prices still being at the low end of the scale, and now the affordability compared to rental rates, you would expect to see more buying activity even than what we're seeing right now. And it really appears that you know, down payment issues being one of the gating factors. Another is that we have a lot of people who just don't want the long-term commitment right now, probably because they're not completely happy with their employment status and would like the ability to move and find a new job without having to get out from under a long-term mortgage. So we're in that cycle right now where psychologically a lot of consumers have decided not to be buyers, and it'll probably take a little bit of time for that cycle to adjust again.
You know, you bring up a very interesting point. When we went to do some 1031 exchanges in Texas, we really had to interview people and try to understand why they were doing what they were doing, because we were buying a house that was – say 1800 square foot house in a nice area for 100 grand that was running for 1300, and the PITI payment would have been 800.
Amazing.
And we were just going, now why are you renting? Mm-hmm. Why is that better? And they would tell me that Texas real estate goes up so few times in their lifetime that owning it has cost them every time they had to get rid of it, get transferred or whatever. Mm-hmm. So in their way of mind, it was like the smartest idea to pay more for rent than have to sell a house. And in California, you know, we haven't been taught that. We've been taught, you know, own stuff most of the time.
Yes.
But you're right. The recent damage has probably got some residual caution attached to it, more so than normal.
Well, and the snapback is probably worse in places like California and Arizona and Nevada. I read a recent Realty Track report where they were analyzing some properties in Las Vegas. And the average foreclosure start had a property with an LTV of 324%.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, when you look at that sort of thing, it does urge caution before you enter into a formal agreement.
Yeah, you realize real estate definitely can leave a mark sometimes.
Apparently, real estate prices can go down occasionally.
Yep, you just have to figure out when that is and sidestep it if you can. I've noticed a change in attitude toward lenders. I mean, principal reductions. Chase has actually got a letter out, and when I read it, I had to laugh because there was two phases to it. If they're basically mailing people letters that says, so we couldn't get a hold of you, so here's your new loan mod, here's your new payment, and here's your new payment coupons. I mean, absolutely no approval necessary. Here it is. The second part of the letter said that, or if it was directed to another group of people, it said basically that please just sign the bottom of the agreement of the principal reduction and put it in the envelope, the pre-stamped envelope back to us, and that'd be will accomplish your principal reduction. When did this happen?
This happened courtesy of the Attorney General settlement.
Okay.
The National Mortgage Settlement. And Bank of America sent out over 200,000 similar notices saying, hey, we think you're going to qualify for a principal balance reduction. Please get in touch with us. And got woefully poor response. So I have heard from a number of the servicers, these larger servicers, and it's typically, by the way, the larger servicers, who are doing exactly what you just described. They're saying, okay, you're not going to contact us, so here's your new deal. We're gonna write this puppy down, sign here, send it back, and it'll all be official. And even at that, my understanding is that the response rates aren't what they had hoped for. So it's an interesting time indeed.
Well, one of the problems, maybe they're only doing it to people that are current. So, but we had an interesting guest on. A gentleman named Lance Martin, who was a big REO agent, you know, not a lot of REOs, so he's definitely has a short sale business that's growing. But just before the radio interview that we did with him, he door knocked 10 homes in Moreno Valley that were scheduled for sale the next week, 1 week away from the trustee sale date, and mm-hmm. talking to people about short sale and that lenders are even actually paying people to cooperate for a short sale or with a short sale.
Yep.
None of the six were interested in the lease. And the reason was that if they agreed with a short sale, first of all, they weren't afraid of the trustee sale date because that had come and gone many times. But they were not interested in cooperating with a short sale because that meant some kind of payment for housing would emerge from that decision.
At the risk of sounding terribly cynical, there are an awful lot of borrowers who have figured out how to play the system.
Yeah,
and if you've been living rent free for a year or two, it's probably easy to get used to that arrangement, and you have kind of become numb to the notion that at some point somebody is going to come in eventually and foreclose on the property. You're going to have to come up with another solution. But I've heard the same thing from servicers who contact homeowners. You know, we buy a lot of non-performing loans. And when you buy those loans, you try and modify as many of them as you can because it's not only better for the borrower, but it's actually the best financial return for the investor as well to get those loans reperforming. And you'd be surprised how often a servicer will be working on one of those loans that was purchased at a discount and offer a principal balance reduction. And, you know, the borrowers are, you know, often very polite and say, well, it's very nice of you to offer, but no, that reduced payment would be the first payment I've made in 2 years and really not interested in making any payments, so just let me know when I have to leave.
Wow.
So it's difficult in this kind of environment really to be more successful than most servicers are at doing loan modifications. Because you need an interested borrower in order to be successful.
I think people have been sort of maybe drugged through the ringer a few times, though, too. So maybe the mailer's coming at a bad time where they were probably at one point pretty interested and got denied and went through a process they felt was pretty rough. And now maybe they're just not interested in opening any letter from B of A.
There is clearly an awful lot of borrower fatigue,
okay.
and that is a big part of the issue. If you were trying, unfortunately, to do a loan modification through one of the larger servicers early in the cycle, you probably never want to speak with a financial institution again. It was not a pleasant experience, and in fairness to everybody, those servicers' operations were really never set up to handle a massive wave of delinquencies and problem loans. That's just, you're dealing with an industry that had a success rate of over 99%, of all the loans that were issued. And to suddenly have a 400% increase in the volume of problem loans and loans that really didn't have any easy solutions that you could pull off the shelf to fix, the mechanisms simply broke down. And so it was frustrating for everybody.
Yeah, we faced unprecedented times there, no doubt about it. This was a great depression of an industry. And, as I look at it now and I do see prices going up now. We're in the buy-sell business and had a very good month last month. A lot of it had to do with we got more for the properties than we penciled when we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely starting to occur. So we're starting to see prices go up. And as prices go up, some of that $10 trillion of debt that we have on a value of property that had diminished starts to become okay. Instead of over-encumbered, it becomes even.
Well, the last two quarters with what has looked like a fairly minimal increase in the average home price, we've seen over a million borrowers go from negative equity to equilibrium or positive equity. That's a pretty significant number when you stop to think about it. So, yeah, as home prices do appreciate, we will see a lot of that paper debt disappear, and a lot of these loans get right-sized, which will really help psychologically, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, you can at least make a case for making your payment, because now you go, okay, well, there is some hope at the end of the rainbow. That's a good thing. Just a couple minutes left. There was recently a big bulk sale that went down in Florida, something like 600-plus homes. You familiar with that one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Is that a typical pile that Carrington would be a participant bidder on?
That was actually part of the FHFA pilot program of selling off about 2,500 Fannie Mae properties.
Okay.
And they secured winning bids for about 2,000 of the properties. They were unable to move a bulk pool in the Atlanta region for a variety of reasons, I suppose. But yeah, that's anything but a typical bulk sale. Those properties sold at 96% of BPO.
Well, that's almost like a trustee sale then.
it's even more kludgy than that, because the winning bidder really only put about 10% of the cash down, and the balance was financed by Fannie Mae through a joint venture. So it wasn't exactly a typical sale. Also, about 80% of the properties are currently rented out. But yeah, that was the pilot program that got a lot of attention about a year ago when it was first announced, and that was the first of the pools to actually close. But there'll be a few more announcements, I suspect, over the course of the rest of the quarter.
In California, there was another pile of properties that, it's my understanding, that they were sold, and California Association of Realtors certainly disagreed with that process.
Yeah, there were 484 properties in Riverside and Los Angeles counties that were part of the pool. I think what CAR is concerned about is that this could become the status quo with FHFA moving large pools rather than pushing things through the more traditional channel. But realistically, it looks like it's a one-time deal. At 484 properties, it's a rounding error in a state where you typically see 5,000 to 7,000 REOs change hands every month. And again, it's very likely we're going to see a similar financial arrangement, 95%+ of BPO and finance through these JVs with Fannie. So it's been a little bit controversial in California. You really can't make a mathematical argument that says Fannie Mae needed to move these things in large pools simply because there is so much interest in the properties. But my perspective anyway is that there's 65,000 REOs in California that haven't been sold. There's another 250,000 properties in various stages of foreclosures. Anything we can do to move this inventory out more quickly just leads to a more rapid housing market recovery.
Rick, we've run out of time. I appreciate you taking time. This has been Rick Sharga, and he's with Carrington, and he'll be on our panel. And I'm looking forward to getting that panel together. It'll be fun.
Same here, Bruce.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, FIBI for Home Investors by Investors, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza. See isurvivedrealestate.com for more on the event and all of the I Survived Real Estate sponsors.